Welcome to Kin Folklore. Today we're discussing the second half of Three Body Problem, the Netflix show written by D.B. Weiss, David Benioff, and Alexander Wu, which was adapted from the novel by Lil Shinji. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul. And for those of you who are joining us for the first time, we're cousins who love to explore the worlds of fantasy and sci-fi shows. In the past, we've discovered the multiverse of His Dark Materials, examined the bending of Avatar: The Last Airbender and The Legend of Korra, analyzed the monster slaying of The Witcher, and navigated the conflicts of House of the Dragon. You can find our previous coverage in your podcast feeds.
We're pretty hyped to dive deeper into this story with you as we explore the conflict between humans and the Santee. We'll be discussing the last four episodes of the season with some light spoilers for the book up to that point. We will not be discussing future spoilers from the book series, so if you haven't seen these episodes yet, come back once you're caught up.
And kinfolk, we will have adult content, and unlike a failed high-stakes science experiment with a loved one's brain or a one-night stand with Saul's forgetful ass, our adult content will not be hit or miss. It will happen. Now this is I love you, like giving up your brain to science so it can do circus tricks to light speed in the hopes of completing the first steps of a subversive space mission. Could have just bought the star for $19 million and left it at that. But let's do both of them. Both of them. Oh, man. All right. So Judgment Day is what we're going to talk about. Let's talk about the Judgment Day. After the raid in the previous episode, Wade and Dashi determine they will need to get a hold of the communications between the Santee and Mike Evans on this converted oil tanker called Judgment Day. They recruit Augie and Raj for a mission that will retrieve the hard drive as Judgment Day passes through the narrow Panama Canal. The mission is horrifying, okay? Like, legit.
Say the least. This was, yes, like, one of the most stunning things I've seen on TV.
It's like, really it terrible. Like,
and I couldn't look away.
No, it was crazy. Any scene that ends with one of the characters being mortified and seeing a little kid's Converse, like, cut from being cut in half. Like, terrible. I don't even understand. But they used Augie's nanotech. They sliced through the ship, disabling it and killing all the men, women, and children aboard. Augie is horrified by what they have done, rightfully so. I truly don't understand how they knew that they were going to be able to cut through everything and still keep the hard drive. That's a whole this story for another time.
Yeah, no, that doesn't really make sense. Yeah, I was like... As cool as this concept is, I'm like, but you could have just, like, if Mike Evans hadn't held the hard drive to his chest in the right place, that hard drive would have also been sliced up.
Yeah, there's so many things that had to happen for this to work out perfect. But, well, we're gonna talk about it. This is so crazy. Back in London, however, the Santee unlocked the hard drive so Wade and Jin can re-enter the game. Like, they're like, yeah, come on in. Yeah, we've got a couple things to say to you. They learn that the Santee have created four proton-sized computers and sent two of them to Earth called Sophons, which can watch, listen, and make humans see what the Santee want, i.e. blinking stars, mm-hmm, numbers in your eyes. The Santee choose to send their first message to the entire world, and it reads, "You are bugs."
Man. The way I would automatically be a person who was like, let's just live life to the fullest. The way, man. I would become Saul so quickly.
yeah, for sure. He was like, fuck this, man. Whatever. We're not even going to be here when this shit blows up. It's all good. Let's just go. Oh, yeah. No, I would definitely be turning up.
All right. So let's talk about Operation Staircase, which is basically what these episodes are about. Mm-hmm. And is doomed.
it's fucking bad. Play it all over again.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Get
So chaos has broken out all over the world. Wade gathers a number of scientists at an estate called Winchwood Manor, and his plan is to send a probe to the Santee fleet to learn more about them. Jin comes up with a plan to use nuclear explosions to achieve 1% light speed. It is called Operation Staircase. At Winchwood Manor, the scientists and Wade are present for a demonstration of a cryopod, which will allow a human to be transported in the probe sent to the Santee, frozen, because it's going to take them like 200 years to get there. Small details, small details. Eventually, however, they meet with a challenge. They need a 1,000 nuclear bombs, according to Jin's plan, and only have 300, and are not getting any more. So the probe needs to be very, very small in order to be proposed towards the Santi fleet in time. Wade says they will have to send a human brain without a body, and he suggests Will as the candidate. Will agrees to the plan, and we will talk more about how he comes to this decision. And by the end of the episode, he dies, and his brain is removed and sent to the Santi. But the probe malfunctions and is set off course almost immediately, devastating both Jin and Saul.
Man, what a jump. What a leap. What a leap. One small step for mankind, another for the human brain. The Wall Facer Initiative. When Jay meets with Saul and tells him a joke, an important joke, but more on that later. We'll get back to that. Wen Jade then returns to the Red Coast station to kill herself. She is met there by Tatiana, who's just out there to make sure she actually does it. Who she's been sent by the Santi and wants to, you know, basically was going to kill her, but she gives her some time. It's oddly
it's actually
sweet
like
scene.
A moving scene. Like,
yeah,
I have a lot of feelings about when Jade's going out because this was actually kind of a moving scene.
It was a moving scene, honestly. After Will's death, Saul has a very bad morning when his one night stand from the previous night, Nora, is murdered by an errant car that is like being autonomously driven. Wild shit. And the Santi have sent this car to take him out, but it hits her as they are arguing on the street. So the Santi really wanted to take out Saul, and a passing skateboarder saves his life. Like, legitimately, that's how it goes down. Dashi questions Saul and then takes him to the UN where he has made what is called a wall facer against his will. You may be hearing me like go like this because this definitely feels like a spinoff of like the beginning of like an Avengers plot. Like, it's weird. It's fucking weird. I don't understand this whole wall
it
facer
definitely
thing.
Felt a little MCU like.
Yeah.
Not gonna lie.
No, I was like, are they gonna open a portal? Is Doctor Strange gonna pop out and tell them they only have a couple of minutes? Oh man. Wall facers are three people chosen by a planetary defense council to make plans to fight the Santi in isolation. They cannot tell anyone about their plans, but unless they break international laws, they are to obey without question. Another attempt is made on Saul's life, but he survives. The season ends with Dashi showing Jin and Saul that there is hope by showing them that despite all mankind's efforts to eradicate insects and like a stunning callback to the Santi telling them that they're bugs, humans have never been able to eradicate bugs. They still persist, which I thought was an amazing way to kind of end the season.
Agreed. I really like this imagery.
No, it was great. It was great. I have some real, like, there's some real leaps in this for me. I'm not going to lie that I just, we'll talk throughout the whole thing. But how did you feel about the series overall?
I really liked it. I'm still unpacking parts of it. And I think that just speaks to how much I enjoy it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of that has to do with the source material and that this book, these books, because the Dark Forest, which is the second book, is covered. The first few chapters are covered in this season as well.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really interesting themes about like what it means to be human, like what the like scientific discovery, what progress means. It is a fascinating work, and I really like what they did with many of the characters. I'm in this story for Jin, for Wade, for Will now, even though initially I wasn't very interested in Will. Now I'm like, are they gonna snatch up his brain? Like, when are we gonna see when are we gonna see Will again? I really enjoy it. I have some issues too, because there's some reaches here.
Yeah.
And not just like science, science fiction-y reaches. Like, there's some things in the plot that if you really think them through, they don't quite make sense. And then I have a really big issue of episode 7, which we can talk about when we get to the wall facers. Mm-hmm. But it definitely took me out of the story for a second. But overall, I really enjoy it. I hope it gets a season 2.
Yeah, I like it too. I definitely hope it gets a season 2. I like the story. I like a lot of the thing I like, I think, the most, if I had to say it, is I think just the amount of science in it. And I remember when you first were talking to me and saying, hey, we should probably cover this. You should check out the book. And this is coming. And obviously, I was like, first was like anti because of who was doing it. I was like, no, I'm not touching it. Who cares? They screwed up Thrones. But I also, once I got into it and we talked about it, I really loved one of the selling points that you gave to me too that made me want to dig into it was you're going to love this because of how much the science is like fleshed out. And it's like really, sometimes it can be hard to like, because I don't know all the stuff about the science, but I really liked like they were basing it in like things that I can have understanding of, like nanotech and, you know, obviously cryogenics, all the things that, like, it was based in our real world science, physics, and it just made me feel like yeah, that's really cool that they're taking like these real concepts and making it like have context in a futuristic kind of like sci-fi setting. And yeah, I think funny things, I mean, the UN is probably more relevant in this fucking show than I've ever seen in the last, I don't know how many years. Like, I was like, wow, they're making decisions at the UN about who should lead the Planetary Defense Council. This is news. This is really new. This is news. But yeah, I thought that it was well done and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the themes. I agree with you that the themes are really strong. You know, I think some of the things that come out of the themes are talking about, like, you know, seeing like we talked about previously, Wenjie struggle with her government, but then actually inviting a pretty similar force, but with more power to the world is a fascinating theme. Like, you know, thinking you're taking the right action when in actuality it's coming from a traumatic place, it may not be the right action. So I think these themes are really cool. What'd you think about the impetus for the Santi going left?
Okay. First of all, can we just go back to the original member of the Santi that we met?
Yeah, I was like,
Pacifist
wondering...
was from, I'm just calling that entity Pacifist.
Yeah.
And they said, do not respond. Do not call back.
Yeah. Just act like
if you hear from us, say new phone, who this? Like, they said, don't respond. So obviously, Pacifist, who called themselves a pacifist, was like, listen, don't do this. This is not smart.
Yeah.
So the fact that the Santi are like, you guys can lie, and so we don't trust you. I'm like, but weren't you coming here to conquer us before? Like, I'm confused.
Yeah. Yeah. It's strange. It's really, really strange. They were coming to conquer in the first place. And I don't know. I think maybe they use this as an excuse because there's no way they've been observing us this long and couldn't see that we have the potential to lie. Like, I think that they thought that maybe these two or maybe this group of people were different than the other people that they've been observing. Maybe that's it. But it seems like a stretch. They would be like, oh my gosh, you can lie. You scare me. I mean, like, you have to have seen that there's the propensity to lie in our culture if you've been observing this long.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that I struggle with is what the Sofon says to Wade and Jin, which is like, she has all of human history at her fingertips. So she learned that at some point, but you didn't notice that when you were, you know, scouring Wikipedia, that there are different accounts of different events. Like that there's different points of view, and that also, like, you haven't looked at our wars. Like,
yeah.
Like, I don't know. I just, it's, this part was a little bit of a leap. I like this idea that being able to be deceptive is a weakness to the Santee. Like, they don't understand that. And they think that makes us shifty. And in the book, there's a lot of, like, snake-like comparisons.
Yeah.
But we, by the end of this series, Wade has actually figured out how to make that an advantage. So I like that part of it, but it's a little, this is a place where I was like, I don't understand how they wouldn't have known that we can lie up until this point. However, I will say this. While we were watching in real time what's happening with Wade, and we have this time period of, like Wade has this conversation with the Santee, and then within a month, he's dead, right? The book, I'm not really sure how long ago he had this conversation. So it's very possible that this conversation happened longer ago. I said Wade, I meant Evans. But that Mike Evans had this conversation with the Santee longer ago in the story than it's portrayed in the show. I'm not really 100% sure on that. But yeah, it seems like a little strange to me that they only figured this out at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the part that makes me feel like they would have known this already and that they're just using this, it's almost like, you know, you're acting like something triggered your response, but that's not really what it is that there'd be no reason for the numbers and the vision if they didn't realize that they needed to keep use some sort of leverage to get people to do what they wanted them to do, i.e. they would have just taken Augie at her word that she just wasn't going to continue her experiments. Like, okay, cool, you're not going to... They wouldn't have to keep starting up the actual timer. Now, you could argue that it's the people on the boat starting up the timer and doing that, but they're being empowered by the Santee to do it, right? So that had to be part of their conversation of how they were going to get people and scientists to not work. I just feel like it's a little bit of a stretch, because even that is like, because even the story they're using is kind of like not an out and out lie. Like he says, it's like a bending of the truth, right? It's not like I'm just making something up. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. Nothing to get that crazy about, in my opinion. It's just an interesting tidbit that's what they use.
I mean, I think one of the reasons that we're struggling with this might be the same reason that the Santee are struggling with understanding how lies work in the first place. Our communication system, like, they don't have the ability to think a thing and keep it to themselves. They speak through some sort of telepathic means, and that, I believe I think it's the Sophon that they're talking to. The Sophon says is like, Once something is known, it is spoken. And so I think we're having trouble with this the same way they would have trouble with understanding why we can deceive. But I don't know. This may be just like too much of a sci-fi leap for me. It doesn't make much sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, so one of the things I think is interesting is this kind of like tension between the Santee who want to stop scientific discovery and how we weaponize scientific discovery in our like society. Like, it's like, hey, we have this, so let's use this. What do you think about how they utilize this nanotech and, you know, weaponization of scientific discovery in general?
I found Augie really frustrating.
Yeah.
In part because that's like the history of scientific discovery in humanity, is that scientists discover something and then like bad actors or sometimes neutral actors who are just trying to prevent something bad then find a way to exploit that thing and make it a weapon. And so I found Augie really frustrating because, like, what did she think was going to happen with nanotechnology? Also, I'm sorry, has Augie never seen, this movie takes place, this show takes place in 2024 in London. Augie's never seen like any, like Endgame.
Like, yeah.
like she's never seen any Avengers movie. Like, I don't, what did she think was going to happen exactly? Like, I understand that she had this image that she was going to change the world by creating some kind of water filtration system. But like, she was going to charge money for that water filtration system. Some people would say that alone is violence. Like, I really struggled with her. And I struggled with her conversation with Raj. But at the end of the day, this comes down to what you and I were talking about offline the other day, which is like, the question is really not like, we need to be asking more, not like, can we, but should we be doing these things? Should we be making this science easier? Should we be making, should we be sharing this, these discoveries openly? Like, what are the implications of scientific discovery? And I think that's kind of what we're being asked to consider with Augie. Augie created this technology that can be used to do something really dope, like, you know, create a sail to send a human probe into space to learn more. That's discovery. Like, that's cool. But then it can also be used to slice up women, children, and men for the gain of the government. So I really struggled with her because I'm like, what did you think was going to happen with your technology?
That was what I was like saying. I think we talked about this offline too, right? I was struggling with the because nanotech is, you know, really thriving and people are really working on it, and there's a lot of stuff even in our own state that's happening with nanotech. And I just think that there's a lot of positive, like, implementations of that kind of technology in medicine and in, you know, even in, like, in, to be completely honest, I think even in some of wherever you land, that's some of probably what was used for the vaccines, right? So I kind of feel like that is, it can be used positively. So my question was always, like, and she does use it positively later with the water filter later in at the end of the show. So my question just was like, why did you even make this thing that could cut through things? Like, what was the point of that? So I agree with you there. I just didn't understand the cutting part because there was so many other ways. Like, the sail is a perfectly good example. Like, I love that you use that because that's like a non-destructive use of this thing, of this technology, that I didn't understand why she even was making this other destructive piece.
Which yeah, brings- I mean, I think her nanofibers can just be used in a lot of different ways. And I don't think she was necessarily making this destructive piece, but like, I guess I don't understand what she thought was going to happen when she, like, I guess I don't understand what she thought was going to happen with the ship. And I think at the end of the day, Augie is that character that is supposed to be kind of the moral compass for the show. Like, Jin, I think, is willing to compromise a lot more, not necessarily for scientific discovery, but because she believes in humanity and she wants us to survive. She wants to fight back. She's not willing to just give up. But I think Augie is supposed to be that character that gives us pause. Like, well, how much are we willing to give up in order to win this? And essentially massacring like entire families on this boat is Raj was willing to do it, but it is a horrible thing. And I think Augie is supposed to be the one, the scientist that's horrified that her creation was used this way.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, Raj is a soldier. He's ready to do that in a lot of different instances, right? Like, he's, you know, I don't know. I just think that's why she can't square it, because that's what I think was frustrating with him. I think Raj would probably share your frustration in the fact that he was like, you've been working on all this stuff and you're acting like you're surprised. Like, this is exactly what we do with this kind of technology. We go to war with it. Like, and he even kind of says some of that, you know what I mean? Like, you're going to have to like, this is what it is. You know what I mean? This is the mission. So I don't know. I guess I kind of, I guess I kind of wonder, the other piece of it is with the, like, nanofiber and the cutting, because that was her original experiment that her business partner, Denny Porlock, is, like, super hyped about. But then we come to find out later that he's actually the same person who's funding Dashi's son working on his escape from the world business. So this guy's funding a lot of things that are, I mean, yeah, he's funding a lot of things that are kind of, like, connected, but also, like, kind of nefarious. He feels like a nefarious character, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Escapism becomes, like, a central theme of the early parts of the second book. I don't think this was an accident that when Dashi / Clarence is talking to his son, whose name I can't remember right now, and then like, that conversation fades into Augie's conversation with Dennis. I don't think that was an accident. I think we'll see Dennis again. I think Dennis is going to be, like, an important business partner, and maybe an influential one. But I guess going back to this thing about Augie, where do you feel like you land on this? Was it right? What did they do the right thing with Judgment Day?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. They did not do the right thing because their argument for doing it was that it would cause less, there'd be less bloodshed than sending in special forces. And I would argue that's not the case. If they would have sent in special forces probably would have taken out the people who had weapons, who they needed to, and secured the whole situation and still gotten what they needed to get. I think this was like crazy overreach of an excessive force, and I just didn't think it was necessary. Like, honestly, that's my opinion on it. And I feel like the other thing that I land on with this is just, you know, my answer most times to that question of just because we can, should we? Is that a lot of times the answer is no. You know what I mean? A lot of times. It's not always no, but a lot of times there's scientific ability to do things that just the world is not quite, the scaffolding, it's like a story that doesn't have good scaffolding. It's like it's not ready for it. Like it cannot support where this is going to go, and now you've unleashed something in the world that has no real guardrails.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I land with you. I don't think that special forces would have been as effective because I'm just thinking about the fact that it's a ship. There's not that many entry points. And so by the time special forces would have gotten to the point where Mike Evans was, the hard drive may have been destroyed, which is basically what, you know, Wade articulates. But I do think that they could have taken some more time. I think the problem with Wade is everything is so urgent to him.
That's where I'm going. I think
they could have taken some more time and watched Judgment Day longer and seen if there was another plan to infiltrate the ship. Even if they had maybe, like, tried to embed somebody onto the ship for a couple months. Like, yes. They clearly are still recruiting people.
Yeah, yes. Also, strategically, I just don't think it's smart. Like, there's no way for you to know that the thing that you need is not going to get destroyed when you're destroying the whole ship. It does, mm-hmm. Besides the human life, just the actual strategic objective doesn't make sense to, like, go and, you know, cut a ship in multiple pieces, you know what I mean? And then, like, hope that the hard drive will still exist, you know what I mean? They were, like, they got lucky that he fell the exact right way at the exact right time in the exact right spot.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I think that while this was, like, a very cool thing, both in the book and in the show, it is a horrific thing. And I think we're supposed to understand that it's horrific and that this, in the end, it wouldn't have mattered. At some point, the Sofon would have reached out anyway, because clearly, you know, clearly they wanted Jin and Wade to have this message about why they're disrupting science and making the particle accelerators malfunction, I think like they would have made themselves known. So what did they actually get out of this hard drive?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. The Santi would have wanted them to have, like, they couldn't have got into that hard drive unless the Santi let them in. So they really did a whole lot of killing for something that the Santi would have willingly given them. You know what I mean? Like, and, you know, and then Augie, in response to this and all in her field, she just pulls a Sam Altman and releases nanofiber technology into the whole world as like open source. Like, here you go.
She's like, it's kind of cool.
I mean, it's cool and not if people can slice people into pieces. I kind of like that she made it open source, but I didn't like, I mean, like you have to have, again, like, I just think like, you know, there's certain things that the world is ready for and, you know, then there's this, you know? So I just think, yeah, there's a lot to be thought about in this. What is really interesting is that all of this is being done and Jin doesn't even know her boo and her friend are like hanging out on a secret mission. She's like, yo, what are y'all, what happened? You saw him when? This is kind of crazy.
It is. And I honestly, does Jin even care?
No, much? Jin does not care.
I think a lot of people would have been like, I'm sorry, what? You went where with my boyfriend?
Jin is unbothered, which lets us...
She is unbothered. I feel bad for Raj. This is a terrible relationship for him.
Yeah, it's really bad. I mean, because, you know, she's just waiting for Will to do his thing, step up. She's like, I think he likes me. I'm not sure he likes me. What do you think about this way that he expresses that he likes her? What do you think about the Jin star, DX3906?
This is the most bizarre gift I've ever
heard. It's 19 mil.
I would be so angry at Will for doing this. I mean, I would accept the gift because it's his money and he gets to choose how he uses it. And, you know, his time on Earth is limited. However, please, if my husband is listening to this...
Do not buy me a $19 million star.
Do not buy me a $19 million star. If you have $19 million, please, 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 let's talk about how to use it first.
Yeah, I mean, I totally don't see him buying a $19 million star. He'll be like, yo, here's like a mil for the star. I'm keeping this 18.
Yeah, I mean, the star is also a charitable donation to...
For sure.
To what essentially amounts to Project Staircase, right? Like, he's donating to the cause, and Jin is the basically the project leader on this cause. And so... He's supporting her in that way. But I would have been like, can you support me in another way?
I mean, did that particular star cost 19? Couldn't he have just given a mil and been like, yo, let me give some other charity? Spread the wealth, bro. Spread the wealth.
I'm pretty certain that Will set that cost. You know? I don't think the charity like was like, this is the cost of a star. I think I'm pretty sure Will was like, I will give you 19.5 million pounds.
Yeah. We'd like to interest you right now in DX3906. It is going for a asking price of 19.5 pounds. And he's like, sure, sign me up. Oh my gosh. So, I mean, it's kind of interesting though, because in some ways, the Santi, you know, killed Jack. Jack gave the money and then he used that money, all of it, to give that star to Jin, and then Jin doesn't find out until he's going into space and his brain is floating in the on her plan that he did that. What do you think the significance of that is? Do you think this is going to be, what's the importance and the significance of those actions?
I think the star is definitely coming back because we were told the name of this star, which is not even a real name, multiple times. So Saul and Will talk about this and say the name three times. Then we see the name of the star when she gets a certificate. Like, clearly this star has some kind of significance. I think we'll definitely learn more about this star in the future. And I kind of like that because it isn't like that big of a plot point that he does this, but it's clearly setting up something, right? The fact that this money came from Jack is, it makes me really sad about Jack. Like, I'm just gonna, like, this is Jack's entire purpose in this story was to be murdered and then to give this money to Will, who then buys a star, which maybe will become important later. And maybe it's because Jin has the naming rights of that star that it becomes important. But I don't really love the fact that Jack, this is how Jack was deployed in the story. Maybe I'm feeling a little like biased because this Samuel is our Tarly. Guy, Sam.
Yeah, it's Samuel Tarly. I mean, like, what? How do they do him like that?
But it's kind of rough for Sam. I mean, I know that he had another role as well, which is Jin is kind of like not that interested in this conflict with the Santi until Jack dies. Like, that for me, that's when Jin becomes the hero of our story, is when she realizes, like, she was in it for the scientific discovery. The game was interesting. It was intellectually stimulating her. But then when they killed Jack, this is when the followers overplayed their hand, because instead of recruiting Jin, Jin is now working against them.
So here's a question I have for you. The thing that I'm thinking about with Jack being the one who funds it is not really a question. It's just a thought, a theory that he always was saying to Will, he never really goes for things. He's, you know, he thought he couldn't go after Jin because he wasn't smart enough. And I mean, he wasn't, you know, he never did physics because he wasn't smart enough. He thought he wasn't smart enough. He didn't go after Jin because he didn't think he was good enough. He does this whole thing. And then he wants him to fight because he wants him to fight for his health. And then he decides, right, to use the money that he inherited after Jack's death to buy this thing for Jin. And then he gives himself up and his brain to science for her. We'll talk about whether we think it's for her, but like in some ways for her, do you think, I'm asking this legitimately, that his brain makes it to DX3906 since it goes off track? Because I don't know.
I don't, that's a good question. I don't think so. I really do think that the Santi are going to pick up his brain somehow. Because the Sofon is interested and says that they were looking forward to meeting him.
Yeah.
So I think that they're going to try to find a way to intercept it. Maybe that will happen by chance. Maybe they're able to find it quickly. But that would be an interesting tie-in if he ends up at that star. How far away is this? The star is very far away because Saul says that the Santi will be here by the time the light from the star arrives to Earth.
Yeah.
So
it could be not, but I was just thinking that'd be cool. That'd be a cool tie-in if he ends up over there and somehow that's where the Santi picks up his brain from and that, like, essentially, like, it's like all of those seeds that Jack was planting about, like, you never really go for it. He ends up doing the most heroic thing. Like, maybe they do get him and put his body back together and he plays some part. I don't know. You know what I mean?
I actually think that's the most interesting thing about Will's character is I do think he made a choice for once here.
Yeah.
And I think we're supposed to believe that, like, that choice is being made based on what Jack said to him, based on his feelings for Jin, based on what he says to Saul. Like, he has a chance to actually be someone and do something that will advance science. And he never really felt like he had that chance before. And so I think that he makes this choice for that reason, that he can do something, he can contribute. And what's, if it's me, if I'm in Will's place, what is my brain going to do after I spend the next few weeks suffering anyway?
Yeah, I mean, it's like fair.
What
yeah.
You know, like I totally understood what Saul was saying to him. Like, they could bring you back, they could torture you, they could do all these horrible things to you. But like, I don't know.
I mean, it's a wild leap that they even think they're gonna get the brain and build him. Like, what information do they have that they can like take a brain and build back a human?
Zero. And that's another point. I was like, this plan is real wild. I think I think we're supposed to understand that this is a huge gamble. It's like, what else? What other plan could we have to try to get some information from the Santee?
I don't know. You could like decide that you got to go all the way to the north and steal a white and bring it back to Cersei to prove that the Nightwalkers exist. This feels so much like I was triggered by bad plan. I'm sorry. Total bad plan trigger.
Davos was in on bad plan too. So anyway.
But, what I'm saying.
But yeah, I think that we're supposed to understand this. They don't really think that this is going to like work.
No.
But they're going to try anyway, because otherwise they're just going to be blind until 400 years from now the Santee show up on Earth. And Raj basically says that to Jin when she's melting down, which is like, what are the odds any of this happens? Like, you're melting down over something that probably won't happen anyway.
Yeah, but then the other thing about that is, like, then why try the plan? Because I don't understand a couple of things in the leaps in this story, this part of the plan. Can they put together back a human body? Okay, cool. Let's take the leap and say they can. Once they've put him back together, how is he going to work as an inside man operative to get people information back, not knowing their communication things? They're just betting on the fact that he's going to be the one to be able to, like, get in good with them. They communicate back to them. He's going to be a spy? Like, how?
I mean, I have a little – I'm going to be quiet because I have a little bit of insight on what happens.
Okay. Okay.
But I'll be perfectly clear. I have not read far enough to even get to this part. I have not seen the brain being shot into the into space. However, I have seen enough conversations on Beyonce's internet to make inferences about what could possibly happen. But I think if I'm putting myself in Wade's shoes, Wade picked Will very specifically. I'm sure there are thousands of people all over Earth who are dying.
Yeah.
And could be used for this project. I think Will is a strategic choice for a couple of reasons. One, Will has the same training as Jin and Augie and Saul. Like, he was their classmate. Even though he's a high school teacher now, he has that training. He's smart. He understands science. Mm-hmm. And very possibly he understands dimensions in the way that Jin does. Because Jin, while she is a little bit different than her friends in that she really has a focus in dimensions, my guess is that she's talked about it enough to Will. Mm-hmm. We know she loves to talk about this. That he knows some of what she knows too. Two, Will has a stake in what happens on Earth because he loves Jin and because he loves Saul and he cares about people here.
Yeah.
And I also think they introduced his trashy sister and her husband to let us know that Will has family on Earth. So he has a stake in what happens. And then finally, Will is not loyal to anybody. I think that Wade particularly liked that, because at the end of the day, Will's only loyalty is towards his Jin in particular, but his friends. But otherwise, if he likes the Santee better, hey,
yeah,
he's not gonna necessarily turn on them, and they won't know that. So I think this is all meant to just be like, They're doing whatever they possibly can, and they're hoping that Will find a way to communicate. Because even let's just think about the timing. Even if Will found a way to get a message to Earth 50 years before the Santee arrived, that would be significant.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, and you know what? I want to go back and amend something that we were talking about earlier. I think I, you know, his trash family actually makes sense that he gives the $19 million because they were trying to get at the inheritance that his mom was going to give him. And I don't know the laws there, but I'm assuming that if he had that holding, it would go to his next of kin, which would be his trash ass family. And he probably didn't want that.
I had questions, though. Will's sister didn't get anything from her parents. Like, that's a red flag, right? It seems like everything was left to Will. And yeah. That makes me wonder about the dynamic in their household.
Yeah.
Was Will the prodigy that the family poured all of their resources in? And was there anything left for this sister? I'm just saying, I'm not... The way that they approach him is wild.
Super wild.
Wild. And like, clearly there's no love lost between Will and his sister and his brother-in-law. But I'm always, my ears always perk up when I hear that they're siblings and only one inherits anything.
Yeah, for sure.
And also she doesn't know what he inherited. So it's not like it was, she got 50-50 of something, because she says whatever mom left to you, which is like, she doesn't know what that is. So my guess is that Will was the golden child because he was a smart one. The family poured all their resources in, and she's resentful about that. Not to say that when he's on his literal deathbed, you should come to him in this way, but I'm going to give the sister a little bit more a little bit more slack.
Okay. I mean, she definitely, I was definitely like, this is rough. This is a rough scene.
Horrible. Like, I walked away with, this is horrible. But then on the second watch, I was like, wait a second. Something's not right here. Should we move on and talk about Wenjie, or do you want to?
Let's definitely talk about this joke. I want to talk about the joke. And, you know, she says that she failed more people than anyone ever.
Oh, I love that line. Can we just say that the acting, she's just amazing.
Yeah.
Like, carry this whole series. But I failed more people than anyone ever. And when I had to really think about what she said, and I was like, I think she's right.
I know. I was trying to let her off the hook, because oddly enough, you do feel empathy for her position once she finds out everything about the Santi and what's going on, and she's lost her whole family, right? Like, not only her family of origin, but her actually created family with Mike Evans and her daughter, and like even these kids who she helped to shepherd along through her daughter, right? Like, she's lost some of them.
Jin was clearly, she's clearly close to Jin, and now Jin is basically her enemy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was like, man, I was trying to bail her out, and I was like, no, she may be right in the story. She definitely is brought this crazy situation on all these people.
I thought of every world leader who ever did something that changed the course of history in a negative way. Mm-hmm. And I could not come up with anyone who did something as significant as her, except for maybe Hitler.
Yeah.
And even Hitler did something that humanity could come back from, could survive, could persist. What she has done has condemned, in this moment, her understanding of what she has done has condemned humanity, has condemned the earth. It is a really profound statement, but it is also, based on her understanding, very true.
Yeah. No, for sure. And then she tells a joke to Saul. She talks about angels and God were present first in the joke, right? Then Einstein arrives and thinks heaven is going to be great because he can play music. The angels warn him not to play music, but he plays anyway. God is angered and destroys his instrument. This is precisely what Wenjie and humanity did, right? Is this kind of like your take on it?
Yeah. I mean, I thought about this joke for 2 weeks. This joke, I could not get beyond this joke. And I think that this joke is foreshadowing something that happens in the second book. I'm not going to go that route. I think I know where it's going. I'm trying to read the second book quickly so I can confirm that I'm right. But I think what Wenjie is saying here is that she is Einstein. Humanity is Einstein. Because Wenjie, it wasn't her idea to reach out to space to begin with. So mm-hmm. we have to say that first. Like, mm-hmm. humanity was reaching out to space. And in the book, it's understood that there's not just the Chinese. Like, multiple other countries are sending signals out to space. Because of Wenjie's ingenuity, the Chinese are the only ones who make contact. But other countries are doing this. Which is an arrogant thing to do, right? To say... Mm-hmm. We're here. Let's broadcast. Let's tell everybody. Hey, we're in the neighborhood now.
Yeah.
The angel being the pacifist, says, actually, shut the hell up, because there is, you know, like, my people will come and destroy you. To which she's like, no biggie. I'm going to reach out anyway, because what your people have got to be better than my people. And now the Santi are heading towards Earth to destroy Earth, to destroy, well, not destroy Earth, but to take it from the humans. And so I think she's kind of telling Saul what happened. But I think there's also a deeper message in here of, like, why maybe this, you know, why this isn't an issue.
Yeah,
why,
I mean, you and I talked.
Einstein was wrong to play music when the angels told him not to.
Yeah, and you and I talked about this a little bit offline too, and I also think it's a little bit of a warning, right? Like, to Saul, like, because she prefaces this whole thing with the joke by saying, "I always thought you were the smartest one," right? So she sees in him a little bit of herself, I think. And for some, because remember when they say, you know, she asked, is Jin as good a, I think it was Dashi who asked, is Jin as good a physicist or good a scientist as you? And she says no, right? And she very confidently says no, like, not like a hesitant, like, nobody else could have done what is happening but me, basically. And I think she sees a little bit of herself in Saul, because she definitely thinks he's, like, the one who has the most potential from what she says, which is wild, because we've seen the rest of the group reference him that way. I've actually seen them defer to him and ask questions of him that I found interesting. But she hasn't, you know, this is the first time we're kind of getting an inkling of, you know, some of what his role is in this group. And I think it's a little bit of a warning to him of, like, hey, when she says, don't play with God, like, this whole joke ends with that, like, hey, don't play with God. And she's almost like, I don't know, I think she's warning him a little bit, in my opinion.
She's definitely giving him a message of some kind, and one that the Santi can't understand, yeah. Which is why I think they... are like, okay, we got to get rid of this guy. Because this was clearly, like, she wanted us to know that she'd pass this information, whatever it is, off to him. I don't even think he understands it. I take her reasoning for reaching out to Saul, that he was the one who worked with Vera.
Yeah.
And that this is the closest thing she can to pass off a legacy to her daughter, which is to say he's learned the most from her daughter. So he might understand how she thinks, because her daughter thought this a similar way.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the tragedies of this story, right? Is that she lays down her life back on the Red Coast base. Her daughter commits suicide. So they, and then Mike Evans, her, you know, who is, you know, Vera's dad, ends up, you know, being killed in the ship with the hard drive. So it's just a kind of like a sad thing that this thing that she was doing, because it was sparked by her
thinking there was no hope for humanity by what happened to her dad and her family of origin. Actually, the irony of it is that it's, you know, Vera's death and all of the events that follow, and her hope, her reaching out to this group of people, actually hurt. She won't get to see this future that she set in motion. You know what I mean? Like, her, Vera won't, Mike won't, everybody's gone that started and set this in motion.
I know. It's very, I found that deeply troubling and ironic. I'm a person who's constantly thinking about, like the families that came and went and didn't mm-hmm. continue. And mm-hmm. so it struck me right as soon as we found out that Mike was Vera's dad, and like, these two only have that one child. Yeah, this is it. That's the end of their legacy, their biological legacy anyway. I mean, obviously they will have a outsized legacy in the history book.
Yeah.
I did get to the point in the Dark Forest where this scene happens. It's not the same. There's the mm-hmm. this joke was written for the show, but I think it's a very clever one, and I think I know where it's going, but I'm not quite sure yet.
Yeah. You know what? I'm not sure what's going yet. I have an idea. The Wall Facers. I mean,
oh my God.
We have a Chinese general, a Kurdish war hero, and Saul. Guy who's like sleeping on the stoop, like, you know, like kind of just, he's just getting through, man. He's just getting through. He's like, he don't even want this shit. He's like, no, I don't want this. Like,
okay. Before we have to talk about what led Saul to be a wall facer, because
okay. He doesn't want it, Andrea. He doesn't want it.
I know he doesn't want it, but like, this whole thing. All right. So
no,
before we get
I'm
to
laughing.
The,
I don't want to cut you off.
I don't want it.
I'm laughing because we got a bad plan and we got a fucking like hero that's rejecting his calling, and it's probably going to amount to not a goddaggone thing. Like really, Saul being a wall facer probably won't matter. Like, it's just like John being a Targaryen. That's all I'm saying. Shit probably won't matter.
Before we get to the I don't want it, we have to talk about this scene with Nora.
Okay.
And like, this episode 7 is the most Game of Thrones like episode in this show.
Where they, instead of sex position, they introduce death position.
Also, they literally just fridge this character out the gate. And I, as soon as it happened, I was like, are we doing this again, Double D's?
I know.
Are we doing this again?
I know.
Benioff,
it was really bad.
Weiss, are we doing this again?
Like, it was bad. It's
Nora,
bad.
The man cannot even remember her name. By the way, in fairness, this is straight from the Dark Forest. They did not make this scene up.
Yeah.
Like, this is straight from the book. But he can't remember the girl's name. She then talks to him very specifically about his worldview, right?
Yeah.
Which is this whole conversation. This is a climate change conversation. And that friction between we have to do something about climate change, which is honestly not that far in the future and already affecting us. But we are, in order to do that, some people now may be hurt. That is a constant theme throughout this entire series, is like the future versus the people here now. That's Augie's problem. That's some of what Saul is saying. And in the way it was framed, this young woman, Nora, framed it, is like, we have a responsibility to our descendants. But I could not get over the fact that this woman was here to make a speech to perhaps change his point of view, and then gets hit by a self-driving car and dies. And at that point, he's like, Nora, that's her name.
It was so fucking terrible. What a terrible thing. Oh, my God.
And then at the end of the episode when he's doing the I don't want it, I was just like, I can't do this with y'all.
It's the ethics that they're drawn to most, right? Like they love this tension, because like you know, this is the type of nerd I am. When I was working on my graduate degree, I freaking wrote a whole, in the ethics course, I wrote a whole thing about the ethics of Game of Thrones and Jon Snow, because, like, I'm just a nerd. And I really took this apart, and the things that they're drawn to is, like, this whole tension between consequentialism and deontology. Like, this idea of, like, obligation and nature of duty, like what we're drawn to, which is Nora's argument, and she throws in a little bit of virtue ethics versus kind of like consequentialism, which is like, hey, I should just do this because the consequences, the outcome, is actually the most important thing. Like, how it turns out is actually the most important thing. So since I'm gonna be here and die anyway, and I'm not gonna be here for it, like, really, I have no real part to play in this. And they love arguing this case. Like, this is the double D shit. It's their jam. If they had this jam, they would rub it in a sandwich and put some peanut butter on it and love it to death. Like, this is what, I swear, this is all their tension comes from, this in the stories they choose.
You know what I mean? Totally. Like, I just thought it was, I mostly think this is funny. I was absolutely floored when Nora died. Like, yeah, it was a shocking moment.
It was shocking. It was definitely shocking.
I was not expecting it. But I just, I had to laugh. I was like, we're doing this again. Are the feminists blogs gonna have to roast y'all every time you write a show?
Yeah.
But I totally hear you. I think this is something this type of friction is, they're definitely drawn to. And a lot of other, like, fantasy, sci-fi, like hero's journeys often
are
about this. Saul being an important part of the story, I didn't see that coming. Biggest shocker of the
week. We have been ducking on Saul this whole time. It's so funny because I actually don't dislike his character. I just think he's, you know, he has some trash tendencies for sure. But I just don't, I always saw that they were going to try to do like a turn on him and redeem him at some point. You know what I mean? Like, for sure. But I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he would be important, but it's an emotional, because Saul was the kind of character that linked everybody together.
Yeah.
They all get along with him. They all love him. He's friends to them all. I thought he was going to be kind of the emotional center of the group, of the Oxford Five. It turns out, it seems like Jin is that person. Yeah. But I certainly thought that, or maybe Will is that person, but that's what I thought his role was going to be. Him becoming, like, just as important as Jin, just as important as Will. More important than Augie. I didn't see that coming.
Well, I am going to give Augie a shout out for doing what she needed to do. When that phone fucking rang and she sent it to voicemail, I was like, yes. She was like, hold on. I'm not going to answer that. Like, when he hit her up and was like, because of what Jin said to him about, like, because he was, like, going on about, Will really loved you, and I just hope somebody would love me like that one day. And she's like, maybe somebody already does. Like maybe that's the case. And then his first thing is to her, and she's like, yeah, I'm out on this.
Augie getting so mad at him throughout the whole series was another reason I didn't really like Augie much.
Yeah.
But obviously she feels about him the way, maybe not as strongly, but the way that Will feels about Jen.
Yeah.
And he is a mess, personally. Like, he's just, like, not, he's a mess.
Yeah, she said, it's not cute. Like, you're super, like, you're not having grown up a bit, and it's not cute. You know what I mean? Like, so, to paraphrase.
So let's talk about why they may have chosen Saul to be a wall facer. I think it's mainly because the Santi want him to die. And also because they know he had this conversation with Wenjie before she died. But I wanted to point out the two books that Wenjie took off the shelf right before she called Saul.
Yeah.
Which was Fermi's Paradox and Game Theory, An Introduction to Game Theory. I think most people understand what game theory is, I think. But I didn't know much about Fermi's Paradox. I had heard about it before in a science fiction setting.
Yeah.
But I didn't know much about it. And it's basically a theory of, like, if there is extraterrestrial intelligence? Why have we not seen it? Why have we not heard it? Why aren't we routinely hearing from alien planets? Like, why is everybody hiding? It's a where is everybody? If we're not alone, then where is everyone? And some of the solutions to this paradox are like the impossibility that intelligent life is really rare. I think that's one that we're kind of common. Like maybe maybe it's us and like one other species out there. Maybe civilization self-destruct before becoming spacefaring. That's the one that I have most, like, that's what I think, right? Like, most of my life I've thought about this and I've been like, maybe we were just like dumb enough to make it to this point. Mm-hmm. Like everyone else's society has kind of collapsed before they've gotten into space. We can't see them, which is another theory. Like they're out there, but we just can't hear or see them. Or they're deliberately avoiding contact with us. And that one makes me really think, like, are the Santi the only ones there? Are there other species out there that are more advanced that maybe would crush the Santi that we should be more afraid of? And so I don't think we know the answer to this. I just thought it was interesting that these are the theories to Fermi's paradox that have been posited over the years.
Interesting. I'm interested in where they go with that and why she chose those books, because they don't seem to do anything by accident, right? Like I do think that, like, you know, we've talked about this, that the fairy tales and the gifts between Jin and Will are important, probably. The fish, the paper boats, like all this plays out, right? So like the books probably have some, the star, all this stuff has some sort of like relevance, I'm sure. They're not planting these little Easter eggs for no reason.
Yeah. And so I'm wondering, like, yeah, I think they're setting out to be able to circle back to small moments in season one and future seasons and things that I'm sure you and I didn't even notice will probably have like bigger meaning and reveal for the future.
I mean, they're good at that. I mean, they had the show that, I mean, all the theorizing that we do now, a lot of it came from the original show that these people were showrunners on.
100%. I was just going to say, if Dan and Dave weren't part of this series, would we be making some of these connections? I don't think so. I think this is where like the meta really impacts the content that you're seeing, because we kind of, after 8 full seasons of Game of Thrones, I don't admit that 7 and 8 exist generally. For me, Winds of Winter was the last episode of that show. Anyway, but after 8 seasons and 10 years of watching their work, I do think that some of the track that they're laying is more apparent to folks who have seen Game of Thrones, and the fairy tales, the paper boats, and the star really like seem significant to me. And then I have to throw the fish in there.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what significance a fish is going to have. Right. But because these gifts between Jin and Will seem significant and the fish was one of those gifts, I have to just assume that the fish isn't, even if it's symbolic, is important as well.
I mean, the name of the fish is symbolic, right? Naming the fish Pushkin, right? That's a famous thing. There's like a story that the writer Pushkin wrote about a fish. I think it is fisherman of something. I think there's like that. I read that recently. Like that was, so that's pretty interesting that like he picked that name. You know what I mean? Like, and it's like a fish. It's funny, haha, but it's also like, well, does this mean something different? Like, it's like a story about a fisherman of men or something like that. I can't remember what it was.
But yeah, and the fact that Will and Jin have this kind of shared language, shared experiences, might become important, because if Will does get intercepted and tries to send a message, he can use some of these shared things to, one, be clear that it's him, right? If he brings up the paper boats, Jin will know that's him.
Yeah, the tale of the fisherman and the fish is what it is. Okay. And what that, why I started thinking about that is because of the very statement that they're using and what, how the series ends, how this could be important, is them going down to that part of the river where he shows them all the bugs. And he says, we haven't been able to get rid of them. Well, the main thing that fishermen use to catch fish are bugs, right? So it's interesting. Are we the food? Are we the bait? Are we the, like, I don't know what they're really trying to say with that. But there's something here that has to do with why bugs are being used multiple times in this series. Not just when they say we are bugs. There's one of the fairy tales they were talking about where I think Mike Evans mentioned something about bugs also.
Well, I think that the bug stuff is so interesting to me because we're introduced to this book, Silent Spring, in the first part of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And that book is about how humanity used
pesticides.
DDT and other pesticides to kill bugs, but it actually harmed us as well. Mm-hmm. And then here we have at the end of the series, and this like scene that like I've seen some people say is like so overdone. I don't care. I loved this scene.
Yeah, me too.
I love this scene. Taking them to like the swamp and showing just how the bugs are not just plentiful, but thriving in their own environment. But that environment is one that is mostly unbothered by humans. I thought that was really interesting. And so I guess I'm wondering at this point, and I know we're going to talk about what we think might happen, but like, is it possible the Santi will destroy themselves or harm themselves in their quest to get to us, to exterminate us? And I think that's a possibility that the show is putting out there.
Yeah. I think that's possible. I also know that, you know, like, think about, like, I mean, something as simple as, like, a tick bite can take down a whole person, right? Like you get, like, so, like, there's also the reality that something that small can cause, you know, can fight back.
I mean,
you know what
termites
I mean?
Can take out a whole building. Foundation. Like,
yeah.
Bugs are, there's a reason humans have had a hard time coexisting with bugs, because even though they're absolutely necessary to our environment, they also can be very destructive to our way of life, to our technology, to our food. And so that comparison really, I don't know, it really got me. I was like, it really gets you, like, if they consider us bugs, can we undermine them and persist, right? Can we get to a point where we can sort of chomp away at the bits where they're hurting themselves in order to hurt us? And I think that is a beautiful symmetry to this series.
Yeah.
Well, sure. To the series so far, but to the season at the very least.
No, for sure. So what do we think is going to happen? Will the Santi pick up Will?
Come on, man. We got multiple check off things going on here. We got Chekhov's brain. we got Chekhov's cryopod. Like, I just feel like we're gonna. Yes, I don't think we've seen the last of Will.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I really don't. I mean, that moment where the plan goes south, I think it's important that Jin and Saul are there, because I think they're gonna believe Will's brain is out there. In, you know, floating through space for the next million years. But I think in the end, something is, they're going to find out that at some point the Santi were able to get him. And then it'll be interesting to me, are the Santi going to try to deceive us?
My theory is that is playing off of your other theory. My theory is that Will is floating towards the star that he bought, and on that, before he gets to that star, he's picked up by another alien life force that is stronger and more powerful than the Santi. And these people are the people that the pacifist really descends from, and which that pacifist was a captive of them, and that those people come back. This is my fan fiction now. Those people, this group of people, aliens, are more powerful than the Santi, and that's where the war is, and that's how we're able to defeat the Santi. We actually combined with our science and their abilities, we defeat the Santi. That's my theory.
Long term. I think that's on the table.
Yeah.
I think that's I can't say no, Paul. That's wrong, because I think everything you just said is totally on the table. And I'm actually, like, when I got to episode 6, I was really mad at myself, because I was like, I had been meaning to read The Dark Forest for the last like 3 months, and I just haven't gotten to it. And now here I am having it spoiled for me, because episode 5 pretty much concludes book 1. And now that it's over and I've had time to think about it, this part's actually the most fun.
Yeah.
Like this, yeah. The prediction stuff is so much more fun. In fact, I wish Netflix had dropped this in 2 sets, like maybe 1 through 5 and then 6 through 8, the way they did with I think The Witcher. Instead of doing it all at once, because I think the theorizing of what's to come is so much more fun than just knowing.
Yeah, I think getting a little meta a little bit, I think, you know, Netflix has not said that they're going to do season 2 yet. And I think after watching this show, one thing I would say is that Dan and Dave definitely, when adapting a show, have the chops. And I mean, we already knew they had the chops from the beginning of it, but they're just definitely like good at doing this. And even the things that we poke fun at them about is really just poking fun and being nitpicky. Besides season 7 and 8.
Yeah, okay. I just want to clarify.
Let's clarify. We're not talking about Game of Thrones. I'm talking about in this particular show.
I have a blood feud with them about Game of Thrones.
Yeah, no, me too. I do too. So this is a lot for me to say. Trust me. I'm working here on my ability to forgive on some levels, okay? I do find it like a little bit of a troll that them and Jeremy Podesta like directed and wrote episodes 7 and 8 after what they did with season 7 and 8. It really bugs me a little bit, like they were trolling us a little bit. I digress. The point is that I just think that their shows play better week to week. That they should, they really, or the double drop, like what you're talking about, would be a good middle ground. But if they're going to stay with Netflix, but if they're not going to keep doing Netflix shows, they should find a network, maybe make up with HBO. I don't know. And they should drop stuff that they could do week to week. You know what I mean? That would be my.
Yeah, take. I wish that relationship with HBO didn't seem so fraught, because I think this show would have played. I think some creative decisions would have bugged HBO, but I think this show would have been better in a week to week. However, what we have is quite good, and there's still a lot to unpack here. And so I really appreciate this. Like, they gave us all these little nuggets, like, that I'm like, oh my gosh, it could go this place, it could go that place. Like, your theory, totally, like, I could totally buy that there is a big bad alien society out there that picks up Will instead.
Yeah, that would be
I would be fine with that story. And I think that they're laying the groundwork that is totally, that story has potential. You know, I also think that, like, my guess is, because we have this Oxford 4 now,
mm-hmm.
that Oxford 4 will probably become Oxford. Well, actually,
we have the Oxford 3.
Well, Augie is out. So,
I mean, she's still part of their crew. Like, do you think she's done with them?
I think she's done with Saul. And as long as Jin is working with Wade, she's probably done. I don't know. She did tell Jin she loved her when she said goodbye. So, okay. We're down to the Oxford 3, because Will has died. We still have Augie, Jin, and Saul.
Pretty interesting that there's 3 of them and it's 3-body problem. That's pretty.
Yeah. Profound. Well, I think we're going to have a number of characters who, other than Wade, who are going to go into a cryopod. I think there will be a time jump at some point, because if this threat is 400 years off.
Okay. Okay. Let's play a game. Let's play a quick game. I love this. Let's play a quick game.
So the threat's 400 years off.
Uh huh.
It's 2024 in our current story.
Okay. And you have 3 cryopods. 3 cryopods to save the world. You can only pick 3 people. Who gets in the cryopod?
Jen.
Okay.
Wade.
Okay.
And Raj.
She leaves Augie to die. The nanotech specialist is dead.
Well, who needs Augie? She's already put her stuff open source. Sorry, Augie. your best work is on WikiLeaks. I don't know what to tell you.
Okay. Here's my three. I'm going Saul. I'm going, God, it's rough. So leading off with Saul is weird. All right, no. Okay, I'm going Jin. I'm going to go with, I agree with Wade and Jin. I think I go there. I think for my third, you're right, it's open source. So if it's open source, I'm going with Dashi Sun. Just in case this shit doesn't work out. He's got the escape plan.
I see where you're at.
Yeah, that's it.
I think I want to be perfectly clear that my choice of Raj is for story purposes, not who I actually think the smartest choice is.
No, this motherfucker is like, you know, nice and all and easy on the eyes, but he's like, you know, listen, you can get a soldier a dime a dozen. This motherfucker is going to be fine.
No, but here's the thing. I think this story that his dad told him is important.
I agree. I do.
And so I guess maybe it's Saul, Raj, and Jin. Because Jin is Jin. She's the most innovative. She understands dimension, so she understands the sophons. She came up with a solution to keep at least one sophon busy, right? Hey, yeah. Put a particle accelerator on the moon. like she fire up all the accelerators, keep one of them busy. She's really, really smart and she's innovative and creative. So Jin has to go if they're going to do this.
Yeah, agreed.
And then Saul has to go because of what Wen Jie told him. And I think what Raj, and now Jin was there for what Raj's father said. So maybe Raj is unnecessary. But I think this like notion of being quiet and playing dead is going to be important.
Yeah, I think you gotta keep Wade in there because Wade, like he has the connections internationally in a way that he understands. He has his arms around what's going on in a way that I don't think anybody else does. Like
you
fully,
don't think
the full picture.
I'm sorry, you don't think Wade is compromised?
He might be, but listen. We're talking about survival at this point. We'll deal with him afterwards.
I know, but compromised by the Santee, I mean.
No, well,
you don't think that the sophon
scared the shit out of him?
Yeah, and sure. Also, she flattered him and then said, "You're a great leader, and we have plans for you."
Oh wow, well, that's scary.
I'm a little worried about Wade now. I'm a little worried about him. I'm not gonna lie, because he was already shifty.
Yeah, I just feel like, you know what, man? I feel like this guy's Nick Fury. Like from Avengers, he's like keeping everybody together.
Okay, but did you see Secret Invasion?
That's what I'm saying. This is what I'm saying.
Okay, if you saw Secret Invasion, you wouldn't. Your feelings about Nick Fury would be different. Disney, I want my compensation for watching that show. Anyway,
oh my God.
You're right. I just feel like that scene with Wade and the cell phone was weird. And I'm like, what was the significance of it? And so I feel like Wade might be a little bit compromised. And I actually wondered if we're going to get to a point where Wade is like, I am compromised. Jin, you have to get into the cryopod. You're the only person who understands what we're trying to do here fully. You have to be the one. I can't get into it anymore.
Yeah, it's possible.
So I'm curious about that. What do you think is happening with Augie? We've already established that she's no longer one of the main Oxford Five. Does it feel like she's being set up to be some kind of antagonist?
I don't personally think so. I don't think so. I think she loves Jin too much, and ultimately, I think she loves Saul as well. I don't think she's gonna go bad. I don't think she's gonna break bad.
I don't know if she's gonna break bad, but I did wonder: is she gonna try to undermine some of the unethical stuff that the Planetary Defense Council is doing. I don't know. Excuse me. I think we should put a pin in Augie, because I think she will be back, but I don't know how.
Yeah, it's very fun. It's very interesting that she's decided to like purify water in like different countries. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, her name is. So I also am curious about Augie's backstory, because remember when she was talking to Jin, she said something terrible happened to her mother's people.
Yeah.
And her name is Augie Salazar. So I took away that even though Augie is American, that her heritage is in South or Central America. Mm. I wish that we had had more time to explore that, but maybe it will come up in the future. Because we understand what happened to Jin. Jin's family was killed in a horrible flood in China. And so we understand that backstory, but we never really get Augie's. I want to know what happened to her mother's people.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. I agree. And do we go? Good.
No, you go.
And the last thing I'm kind of interested in is next season, if we get one, are we like picking up right where we left off? Do they jump forward in time? Like, what do you think?
I've thought so much about this. This series lives rent free in my brain right now. and I got to say that. Thank you, Beyonce Knowles Carter, for interrupting that because Cowboy Carter pushed it to the side momentarily. However, I've been thinking so much, are we going to get a big time jump? I think there will be a time jump in season two. I don't think it will be in the first episode. I think the first episode is going to bring us back into 2024, maybe they're in 2025. And then at some point there will be a decision to move, to propel time forward. I'm also just, I know we try not to be overly meta, but I am just curious, like if I think they can finish this story in one more season. So I think it will depend on, does Netflix greenlight season 2 and 3, like they did with The Witcher and with Avatar The Last Airbender? Do they just greenlight one more season like they did with Shadow, Blood and Bone? Like, I would like to know. I think it depends on how much more time we have, but I actually think they could effectively finish the whole story in one more season, 8 more episodes.
Yeah, I think like if they need more than 8 to finish the story, they should greenlight both the seasons they need. If they need 2. Because I think that people that don't get the runway to tell the full story cut corners. I've seen it so many times, and they just like end up not telling a good story in the seasons that they have. And then by the time it gets popular, now they have to do all this retconning and figuring things out. So I hope that they do. I hope that if they're gonna do it for the amount of time they need it for, and then go from there. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, totally. I think that they should have as many episodes as they need, and if that's two six episode seasons, great. That's 12 episodes total.
Yeah.
But I actually do with the speed of which they moved through season, the first book, and while yes, there's been a lot of criticism about the pacing of the show. Everything worked for me except for the last 2 episodes. I thought the pacing was fine until we got to the final 2 to 3 episodes where I was like, oh, okay, we're just like moving really quick. Like, I think this wall facer thing could have used one more episode to kind of breathe. But I guess to answer your question, I think we get a time jump in season 2, but only if there's only one season left. And then in which case I think we get it in episode 1. If we have more time, then I think we get it towards the middle or end of the series, because I think that as far as I know, where there's still a lot of the Dark Forest to cover. Where I'm on page 65 or something of the Dark Forest, and I still haven't like finished where they got up to in the show. But I'm not that far from it. So I think there's still a lot of book there. And then there's a whole third book. So they could potentially do two more seasons, but I think they could do it in one.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. Well, man, it's been fun to cover the show.
I've thoroughly enjoyed this. It's been really nice to talk to you about this and also offline. And it's just like nice to be back in theory crafting.
Yeah,
which
I agree.
Because we got to prepare for Hot D.
Exactly. No, I totally agree. It's like, you know, it's great to like cover shows that we love and worlds that we have visited many times, but it's also good just to like visit something that you haven't spent a lot of time in and kind of like imagine and wonder. So like I love that part of this, you know?
Yeah,
so.
Me too. It's nice to be in a new story that allows us to have conversations about deeper themes. And I appreciate that this show has kind of put us back in that frame of mind, because to be honest, like both Avatar the Last Airbender and Gilded Age, which are the last two things that we covered, we've already covered the Atla themes. Yeah. Like, so it didn't really give us anything new.
Yeah.
And then Gilded Age, while I think everybody should go watch it, it is not a multi-level theme. Like it is a period piece that is about a lot of like historical themes and things that inform how we are today, but it's not this kind of like big level thinking theory about crafting, humanity, yeah, thinking about our place in the universe. Like it's not that kind. So this has been fun.
And if you want to get in touch with us about anything that we've been covering, or just in general, you can reach out to us at KinFolklorePod on Instagram and on Twitter. And you can join our Facebook group, Kin Folklore, also Kin Folklore Podcast. And or hit us up at kinfolklore@gmail.com. And we will see you next time.
Bye, everyone.